Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hello and welcome to Circling the Bases, proudly presented by RotoWorld and NBC Sports. My name is DJ Short, and I'm joined here by Eric Samulski. The main focus of today's episode will be an extremely early look at our top 20 fantasy starting pitcher for 2024, as well as some names who just missed our list. We'll also introduce you to some pitchers from overseas who could be joining Major League Baseball this offseason, who you should keep in mind. But at the top here, Eric, let's dig into the MLB playoffs for a bit. The Rangers are apparently an unstoppable monster, up 2-0 already on the Astros, despite those first two games being in Houston. I know Yordan Alvarez is like doing everything he can to keep the Astros in it, but this is going to be a tough hill to climb for the Astros at this point.
Yeah, listen, I'll give myself partial credit when I said that if the Twins won, they'd be able to beat the Astros, because we know that didn't happen. But I think it was just, you know, we identified a vulnerability with the Astros. Their starting pitching was not great in the end of the year. And who knew that Jordan Montgomery would be so good, or that Nate Eovaldi, who looked like still really injured at the end of the year, would just, you know, I mean, he's been a phenomenal playoff pitcher in his career, and he's stepping up, and now the Rangers get a maybe healthy Max Scherzer for game three. And I just think, like, the Rangers went on a cold stretch there toward the end of the season, which I think overshadowed just how good they were for the vast majority of the year. And I think they're just clearly reminding people right now how good they are. And you know, who would have guessed that their batting average leader in the playoffs would be 21-year-old Evan Carter?
I know, it's crazy, right? I mean, that's something you couldn't account for either,
right?
You know, even at the start of the season. But I know there's been a lot of conversation about sort of the parity involved with like making the playoffs in the first place. Would you look at the Phillies? You look at the Rangers. These are teams that spent a ton of money to get to where they are. Granted, Jacob deGrom is not in the Rangers rotation, which is crazy. They made this run without him. Cole Ragans too. We'll leave that aside. But these are teams that invested a lot of money in free agency, and it's actually like paying off for them right now.
Yeah, I think we got to stop with the narrative that like this playoff format doesn't benefit the teams who get buys. I mean, that is a disservice to the Texas Rangers and the Phillies, who were really good teams during the year. I mean, both of them won 90 games. Yes, the Braves won more games than the Phillies. First of all, the Astros did not win more games than the Rangers. Exactly tied, right?
Yes,
the Orioles won more games. But just because a team wins 10 more games during the regular season does not mean they are automatically, obviously, the far superior team. A lot of things happen over the course of a long season, and with health and the ability to platoon and play kind of like hot bats and things like that, where like these aren't, it's not like, and no offense at all to any Marlins fans out here, but it's not like we're watching the Marlins in the NLCS right now, who shouldn't have really made the playoffs in a normal year, and now all of a sudden they're beating better teams. Like, we're watching very good teams playing and beating other very good teams. And right. there's nothing wrong with what we're seeing on the field.
Yeah, I mean, the difference between a 90-win team and a 100-win team is like two wins per extra per month or something. Like, it's not a huge difference over the course of the season. And, you know, like a player like Carter who came up and, you know, has given this infusion and really just plate discipline beyond his years has been super impressive, both offensively and defensively. He's made a couple of really great catches. Yeah. So far this postseason. In this game three between the Astros and the Rangers, back in Arlington, you said Max Scherzer, that's a big question mark. He hasn't pitched in over a month in a competitive game situation. But then Christian Javier going for the Astros, who coming into the year, I think there were big expectations for him to really step up and fill that Verlander type of role, Framber Valdez too. But Javier, I think a lot of people expected him to step up. In his first playoff start, Javier pitched pretty good, but he was wild too. I believe he walked five batters. He's kind of an enigma too. You could see Scherzer come out and struggle. I mean, you saw that with the Mets for a good portion in the season where you didn't know what version of Scherzer you're going to get. But knowing, you know, from Scherzer's perspective, it's just like, and I think John Smoltz said this yesterday on the broadcast in regard to Eovaldi, it's like, you can be max effort for these games because you don't know if you're going to pitch again this season. So, you know, kind of a hyped up Max Scherzer in front of a home crowd, you never know.
Yeah, it's hard to discount that, right? Because you know he's going to give whatever he can. And I was critical of Javier coming into the playoffs, and he had a really good start the last time out, as you mentioned. So it's like, is one start going to drastically change what we were seeing at the end of the year? I mean, I would say no, but we're seeing with Nathan Eovaldi that like maybe it should. Maybe that there are guys who gear up for the playoffs. So who really knows? I mean, listen, I don't think the Astros are going out here and getting swept. I'd be shocked. So they're going to take one of these games coming up. They're too good a team, but this Rangers team is really strong. And then, you know, I think, you know, moving to the NL side, like the Phillies team that we saw throughout the year, we need to acknowledge that that was either without Bryce Harper or with a limited Bryce Harper.
Sure.
And as he's gotten healthy, and also whatever was going on with Trey Turner too, right? I mean, we need to acknowledge that too. And then, you know, standing ovation changed the whole season, right? But the Phillies with a healthy Bryce Harper and a producing up to expectations Trey Turner are vastly different team than slumping Trey Turner and unhealthy Bryce Harper. So like the fact that they're getting hot right now should not be viewed as a shocking thing. You know, maybe Zach Gallen shouldn't throw fastballs right down the middle of the plate. They're going to be a tough out regardless of who they face. And I think it'll be a competitive series. You know, tonight on Tuesday, Merrill Kelly versus Aaron Nola is a solid pitching matchup and one that where the Diamondbacks could get to Nola. You know, we've seen him have some rough starts. But it's hard to count out the Phillies right now, the way they're swinging the bats.
Yeah, and especially in Philadelphia, where that home field advantage is crazy right now. Yeah, and Kelly against Nola, I think that's a coin flip game. Nola has been pretty good in his first two postseason starts. Kelly was great against the Dodgers. So we'll see. I think just looking at the American League series, teams are 0-21. All time when losing the first two LCS games at home. It's a very difficult thing to overcome as they go into Arlington. We'll see, but hopefully we get some more entertaining baseball here in the days to come. But basketball season, almost here. It's a week away from the start of the season. That means one thing, draft season. Get the Roto-World Basketball Draft Guide, which includes all the rankings, player outlooks, and projections you need to win your league this year. Go to NBCSports.com to get your draft guide now and use code PRESEASON25 to save 25% off and receive a $10 Fanatics e-gift card. It's a great deal. So if you have a fantasy basketball draft this week in the next couple of days, definitely get our Roto-World Fantasy Basketball Draft Guide today.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
So like I said, we are going to spend this show talking about next season, kind of an early look at the starting pitcher terrain. And last week, if you remember, we kind of did a state of the union as to what we're thinking fantasy-wise. And I think we each said, you know, we're a little more resistant to go really aggressive early with starting pitching. Now, I found this a pretty interesting exercise because while I said that, I felt like once I got to like top 20, it was just like, it's almost like a crapshoot of where this could go. So while you're going to be less aggressive, I feel like there's fewer safer options because of all the injuries in the starting pitcher landscape right now. I'm wondering what you think.
Yeah, I guess my argument would be safety. Like, I guess I feel pretty good about my top three. And then from there, I could move guys around in any number of ways. And now that's not saying the guy I have ranked four could be 17, but he could be eight. He could be seven. He could be nine. So for me, I think that even solidified it more, which is like, if the whole thing from four on is going to be personal preference, maybe some things we see in spring training, you know, how the draft board falls for you, you're saying I'm either going to make sure I get one of the top two or three guys, or I'm going to be drafting a guy early that I have some question marks on. So for me, I would rather take the shot that the guy I have ranked three, four, or five falls to eight, you know, starting pitcher eight in a draft I'm in, realizing that like the gap for me between, you know, these starting pitchers at the top, regardless of the top three, is not really all that large. And there's a lot of names that you and I both have in our top 10 that in years past, people would be like, what is that guy doing? And why is that person in the top 10? And it's like, well, there's no Shane McClanahan. There's no Brandon Woodruff now. There's no Sandy Alcantara. Not that he would be top 10, but we're probably not getting Robbie Ray until, you know, the middle of the season.
Jacob DeGrom is a huge mystery.
Right.
Yeah.
DeGrom is a mystery. Scherzer, who's now back pitching, but like, are you taking Scherzer in your top 10 like you would have in the past? Probably not, given the age and injuries. And this is kind of like a pretty consistent thing across the board. So yeah, to me, this further solidified my idea of like, I'm going to wait and see how the board falls rather than, you know, rush for the top two names who everybody knows are the top two names.
All right. So let's get to that. Why don't you unveil your top 10? Then I will read mine. I think we have pretty similar names in our top 10, maybe just in a slightly different order, but go ahead.
So number one, I have Garrett Cole. Number two is Spencer Strider. Number three is Zach Wheeler. Number four is Luis Castillo. Number five is Corbin Burns. Number six is Kevin Gausman. Number seven is Pablo Lopez. Number eight is Tyler Glasnow. Number nine is Zach Gallen. And number 10 is Max Fried.
Okay, so we have the exact same players within our top 10, just in a different order. I have Cole Strider 1-2 as well. I have Kevin Gausman at 3, so 3 spots higher. I have Luis Castillo at 4. Zach Wheeler at 5, Corbin Burns at 6, Zach Gallen at 7, Tyler Glasnow at 8, Pablo Lopez at 9, and Max Fried at 10. So when we start on this list here, I kind of went back and forth between Cole and Strider. I think if you wanted to shoot for the upside with the strikeouts and some just projected ERA improvement, which I think is very, very possible. Strider did have a 3.86 ERA this season. But the whip was 1.09, had 281 strikeouts. I think you could make that case if you wanted to go for the strikeouts, go for it. With Cole, 2.63 ERA. The expected ERA was almost a full run higher, but going to win a Cy Young Award this year. The strikeout rate was a little lower than you would expect. But I think as far as safety, I think Cole is – the floor is very high there. I think Strider's the upside candidate, but Cole, if you want to start safe, he's probably the best way to go.
Yeah, I think so for sure. I mean, you know, I was wrong on the upside of Strider 2 years ago because I was worried he was a two-pitch pitcher, which historically speaking is not something you want to target. We obviously know that he has, you know, surpassed what is typical of a two-pitch pitcher. But again, we're nitpicking between are you number one or are you number two? So the idea of a pitcher who has more pitches to offer, who still has strikeout upside, I think there's a little more security there, as you mentioned. And I also think that the cutter was really important for Gerrit Cole because I do think it helped to mitigate some of the home run issues that we've seen from him in the past. And so I just feel a little bit better. The home run issues were a huge concern for me. And so I just feel a little bit better about Gerrit Cole than I do about Strider. Obviously, you're happy with either one of those guys. I will say I had Gausman third on my initial run. And as you know, I've been also going through starting pitcher rankings with Nick Pollock over at PitcherList, talking about starting pitcher stuff. And there were some interesting things that he brought up to me. I think that knocked Gausman out of that spot for me. One is the whip is not great for somebody you're taking this high. He had a 1.24 whip last year and everybody was like, well, he had a 363 BABIP. So obviously that's not going to sustain. And the BABIP fell to 323, which is, you know, it fell, it didn't fall all that far. And so he had a 1.18 whip, which that's not really good for somebody you want to take that high. And then the interesting thing, PitcherList has this stat, which is called ICR, which stands for ideal contact rate. So it basically tallies up the barrels and solid contact that a pitcher gives up on the total number of batted ball events. Gausman's rate was, what's the number here? Sorry. Gausman was 16th percentile. He had a ICR rate near 50%. So when you have two really bad BABIP years in a row, and then you also look at the fact that the pitcher is giving up a significant amount of good contact, that maybe tells us that BABIP is not fluky. And sure, so we shouldn't really expect it to go down. So Gausman is still, I mean, he's still in my top 10. But for me, I think the batting average against is going to stay up. I think the whip is going to stay up. And so I think I'm not as comfortable with him as the guys I had above him, like Luis Castillo and Wheeler and Burns, who, 2 years ago was the number one
pitcher. I know. It's crazy that he's being bumped down so far. I couldn't let him fall. And he's going into a contract year, too. Mm-hmm. He's going to have all the motivation in the world.
Yeah. And who knows if he starts in Milwaukee, right? I mean, like, there are a lot of people suggesting now that Woodruff is out for the year that the Brewers would be better off trading Burns before the year starts. So they get the other team gets a full year of Corbin Burns, which is obviously going to mean Milwaukee gets back a lot more in return. So what if Corbin Burns goes to a pitcher's park?
Sure.
Right? Like, we've always said that ballpark kind of works against him a little bit. So what if you have Corbin Burns, who, you know, still had a 339 ERA, a 107 whip, and 200 strikeouts on the year.
Yeah. In a year led the National League in whip. So.
In a year that people thought wasn't great. Yeah. And he actually, like, was getting better as the year went on, too. So what if you get that version of Corbin Burns and now he's in City Field? Now he's in somewhere that's a pitcher's park. I know you would love that. Yeah. But now he's in somewhere that's a pitcher's park. I mean, now, again, you're not like jumping somebody up drastically, but you're talking about Corbin Burns, obviously top five starting pitcher.
One thing about Zach Wheeler that I'm thinking about, he's been outstanding this postseason. We know that. But let's say the Phillies play all the way straight through the World Series. And Wheeler ends up pitching, you know, 40 something innings in the postseason, in addition to, you know, what at 190, 195 innings he threw in the regular season. How much does that weigh into your thinking about the carryover effect into the next season?
Yeah, I mean, that's the Sandy Alcantara question, right? I mean, were people concerned about Sandy Alcantara's innings going into this year when he had so many innings before? If he hadn't gotten hurt at the end of this year, would the innings have been a concern? I think obviously they weigh in a little bit, but I think that because we talked last week about how injuries were a factor for so many pitchers, I'm not going to really let injuries dictate so much of my draft strategy at the top, which is, I mean, I have Tyra Glass now in my top 10. So obviously that's the case, because for me, I'm looking at a pitcher who's probably going to be elite when he's not injured. And so if I'm playing in a non-NFBC format where I have an IL spot, then I'm super comfortable taking Wheeler third, because if he's hurt, I put him on my IL, I pick up another pitcher, I'm still getting stats to add to the Wheeler stats. And we've seen a lot of good waiver wire starting pitching where if Wheeler throws 160 and I need 30 innings from a waiver wire spot, when you combine that together, I'm getting what is probably pretty elite production. Now, if I'm in an NFBC format or I'm in a draft and hold format and I can't make waiver claims or I can't stash an IL, then sure, maybe I bump him below Luis Castillo, who doesn't have similar concerns, or Corbin Burns. But I don't think I'm dropping him out of my top five.
It's a perfect segue into Tyler Glasnow. What number did you have him at?
I had him eighth.
I had him eighth as well. And I think in the years previous, when he was healthy to start a season, he was a fade for me, because I was always like, he's not going to throw 180 innings. But after the year that we just saw, with so many big name pitchers going down or missing significant periods of time, I think Glasnow, that, like you were just saying, when he's pitching, he's elite. Like, that's not a question. It's just a matter of, can he stay on the field? But what you're getting from him, I mean, we saw just in 120 innings this year, he struck out 162 batters. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, the ERA was maybe a little higher than you would like, but the WHIP was 1.08, which is also elite. So I'm going to be a lot more aggressive on Glasnow next season than I've been in the past.
Yeah, I think, listen, was it 120 this year, I think, was his total innings. Yep. So does he get to 130? Does he get to 100? I mean, it depends if you're a glass half full or, you know, glass half empty kind of person. I think even if you're projecting 130, like we just talked about that, like, you know, that's still, you're going to get really solid production out of that in that 130. And so, like, you know, the guys I had below him are guys like Zach Gallen, who's probably safer, you know, in terms of injury concerns, but doesn't have near the ceiling, or Max Fried, who also has his own issues. He had a blister, he had some arm troubles. So, like, you know, and then we'll get to the guys in our next set of 10, but I'd rather just take the chance on the upside, knowing that, you know, I'm going to get really good production when he's on the field.
So I have Max Fried at 10 on my list. He was excellent when he was healthy this season. He's generally he has an ERA right around 3 for his career, has arguably the best, or not even arguably, the best offense in baseball backing him. So, you know, the win potential is going to be there if he's healthy next season. I think maybe not the upside of some of these other names we're going to talk about, but sometimes, you know, safe and track record is okay to follow, where I would have no problem with having Fried as my number one if I waited on starting pitcher.
For sure. And he gets all the same team context benefit that we give to Strider. Probably going to do well in wins, even though, like, we're not really trying to predict that. Ratios are going to be really safe. Is he going to be healthy? Who knows? Maybe had some forearm issues, but again, we've talked about that baked into the cost. Does he have Tyler Glasnow strikeout upside? No. And that's why, you know, we both have Glasnow ahead of him. That said, it's not like he isn't getting strikeouts, right? This isn't like Kenta Maeda out there. You're still getting four category production on a really good team. And so I'm super comfortable taking him inside of the top 10 and, you know, hoping I get 150, you know, maybe more would be great out of him.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we went through our top 10. Do you have any other takeaways from that? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think we have to discuss that the major surprise for a lot of people is probably going to be that we both had Pablo Lopez in our top 10.
Fair.
And coming into the year, if you had told people in 2024, Pablo Lopez is a top 10 starter, they probably would have told you you're an idiot. And even though, you know, some of that was injury related in Miami, he wasn't a picture of health, but we knew he had flashes of what he could be. But he was really good this year, like really good. And that's really even good, including a stretch where we know he struggled. And people were like, oh, Pablo Lopez isn't an AC. Like, look at what happened. But he threw 194 innings with a 3.66 ERA. His strikeout rate was he had almost 11, like 10.5 strikeouts per nine. It was 29.2%, 1.15 whip. Like, he went to driveline. He developed that sweeper that angers people so much for calling it a sweeper. You know, even though we've had multiple, like Adam Wainwright was great in explaining it when he was doing the game of like why it is a different thing.
Man, I'm so excited. I mean, of Wainwright, you know, to finish up his playing career, but I think he's going to be a huge asset for fans to learn about the game and kind of tying the analytics and, you know, the pitchability that we always hear about. Tying those two things together for the average person and to make it palatable, I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, I think he was tremendous. And Pablo Lopez is tremendous. I just think the new arsenal he has, you know, the swing and miss was for real. He does not give up a lot of good hard contact. And I think you're going to be happy if you wait. Like, he's a guy where if I'm waiting and I wind up getting Pablo Lopez as my ace and I was able to take three or four hitters before him, like I feel phenomenal about that.
So interesting with like expected ERA on Baseball Savant. So lowest among pitchers with 200 balls in play among starting pitchers, Max Fried was 2.75. Second among starters, Pablo Lopez at 3 even. Number 3 among starting pitchers, Spencer Strider. So just to give you a little window into how good Pablo Lopez was this year, I mean, the strikeouts were insane. I think he had 230-plus strikeouts this year as well. So I think definitely deserved. And like you said, the injury history coming into this year was a little shaky, so much so that when he was traded to the Twins, it was referred to as the Luis Arraez trade. But we won, and you know, Arraez was great. He had a good year.
A win-win for both. Both teams got what they needed.
Exactly. So, all right. So let's hop into our next group here, 11 through 20. Eric, you can go ahead.
11, I had George Kirby. 12 was Freddy Peralta. 13 was Walker Buehler. 14 was Aaron Nola. 15 was Tarek Skubal. 16, Yuri Perez. 17, Grayson Rodriguez. 18, Bobby Miller. 19, Joe Ryan. And 20, Zach Eflin. And now you're starting to see why DJ and I were saying that once you get toward like the bottom of the top 20, you're like, oh, okay, this is weird. And I made a little tier of, you know, for me, 15 to 18, Skubal, Perez, Rodriguez, and Miller is high upside young pitchers who maybe that's an aggressive ranking, but there's ace potential there. They did some things this year that I really liked. Obviously, everybody knows what Tarek Skubal did this year. And so you're reaching a point in your draft where you just say, you know, screw it, I'm going to go for upside.
Chances are this is what's going to happen. Your first starting pitcher, you know, if we're talking about like a 12-team league, unless someone's super aggressive and they grab two starting pitchers early, you're going to get a pitcher you feel really good about. And then your next pitcher is probably going to be a breakout candidate. And that's not like a bad way to go. That's the way I'm kind of rationalizing it right now.
Yeah, a breakout candidate or a Zach Eflin. You know, like somebody like that, a breakout candidate or, you know, I mean, you know, there are some guys that we'll talk about that are on the fringes of the top 20, where I could see people saying, you know what, there's safety here. And they're a little boring, but like maybe I took Tyler Glass now as my ace. And so getting, you know, a more boring pitcher who doesn't have breakout potential, but also doesn't have a really low floor is valuable. But I think obviously you would like to draft for the upside, especially in like a 12 team format where we're able to use the wire so much more regularly.
Yeah. So my 11 through 20, I have George Kirby at 11 as well, Freddie Peralta at 12. So that's my top 12, which I think is very clear for me. Mm-hmm. But that's my top 12. It's wide open after this. I have Logan Gilbert at 13. I don't think he was in your top 20. I have Logan Webb at 14. I don't think he
Logan Gilbert is my 20. Logan Gilbert is my 21, and Logan Webb is my 22. So okay, we're talking. We're like right on the fringes there. Those are the guys I was saying. Like you could just go with Logan Webb, who doesn't have the upside, but you know what you're getting, and there's some safety there.
Right, exactly. So Aaron Nola I have at 15. Framber Valdez I have at 16, as long as we ignore his start yesterday. Tarek Skubal we have at 17. Yuri Perez at 18. Walker Buehler at 19. And 20, I have Jesus Luzardo. I have a feeling I'm going to change my mind a lot of times during the offseason, but he's one of those ones where I'm like, yeah, feels good for now. Feels safe enough, but I know I'll probably change my mind. But Luzardo is my number 20.
Yeah, I have Luzardo 28 right now. And then I guess we could talk about Framber later. I have him 32nd.
Yeah.
So that would be our biggest discrepancy. But I think the other guys are pretty solid in there. Buehler, obviously, you know, he was a top 10 pitcher before getting hurt. Maybe we're not going to see the strikeouts we saw in his, you know, breakout year, you know, the 2021 kind of like huge strikeouts. He's been trending down, but we're still going to get good ratios, really solid team context, really good pitcher in general. Freddie Peralta was the best pitcher in baseball in the second half of the year. Yeah. I'm not really sure there's an argument against it. If there is, it's because you could say Tarek Skubal was. I mean, they were both like lights out. So those guys make total sense. Was it weird to you that you were putting Tarek Skubal in your top 20?
The more I dug into it, no, honestly not. Because I think if you're deciding between like Yuri Perez, Walker Buehler, like Grayson Rodriguez, like all those pitchers, like, I don't know. I feel like Skubal's on even footing with those guys, honestly, mm-hmm. in potential. And what we saw in the second half too, I think maybe the only thing one of the factors here is like, are the Tigers going to provide any offense at all to him next season?
Yeah. I mean, I always say when you see jumps like this in season, after season, whatever, are they tied to tangible changes or not?
Yeah.
If they're not tied to tangible changes, it's harder to buy into it. Well, Skubal had a mile and a half velocity increase, which led to way better performance on his four-seam fastball. So that's mm-hmm. a tangible change, which led to results. And then his changeup, which he started to lean on way more as the year went on, had a 29% swing and strike rate and led all of baseball with a 41% CSW. And I didn't like his slider in the past because I thought it was inconsistent. So the fact that he's now using that as a complementary pitch and he has an elite fastball and changeup, to me, I think that gives him a safer floor with the ceiling to, as you mentioned, belong with these other guys. Because if he does get that slider to become more consistent, you're looking at three plus, consistently plus pitches. And it's hard to find a pitcher who has three consistently plus pitches that is not a fantasy ace or the highest end of the high-end SP2s that you could find.
What's crazy about Skubal was in 2021, the barrel percentage against him, he was in the 1 percentile in the bad way, as far as barrel rate against. This year, 94th percentile. That is crazy. How like you could see the potential even then, but he was hit hard. He was, you know, he was victim of the home run ball very often in that season. You could still see the ingredients of a potential breakout here. So mm-hmm. I think we are seeing it. The big question is like, how hard is he throwing in the spring? And if he is throwing as hard as he did in the second half this year, can he maintain that for like a full 160 innings? We're not going to know that You know, we're going to just have to wait and see. But that's the chance you take with a player, like you said. Like, there was no smoke and mirrors behind his performance this season.
Yeah. The Aaron Nola thing is interesting because he's another free agent. So we're going to see where he ends up. And he's somebody who, you know, is maybe not the pitcher we knew in the past. But what I was intrigued by is that he is starting to change how he pitches. He's using his sinker a little more than his four seamer because the four seamer doesn't have the velocity it used to. He's mixing in a cutter now. There are some signs that he is evolving as a pitcher, and depending on where he winds up, he may not have the team context that he has with the Phillies, but he could have a much better home ballpark. And I think there's an interesting pitch mix there if he can alter it in a way that is slightly more effective. And so maybe he goes to a team that helps him to optimize the pitch mix. And then I was surprised I had Grayson Rodriguez here because his end of year stats aren't great. And I will admit that, like, talking to Nick about this moved him from somewhere like in my mid 20s. So I wasn't like, you know, he was once the number one overall pitching prospect in baseball. We've seen the flashes of how dominant he was. So it wasn't like I was low on him, but I moved him from my mid 20s into the top 15 because he came back and looked good. So from July 1st on, he was ninth among all starting pitchers in WAR. In 76 and two-thirds innings, he had a 2.58 ERA to end the season. Now, that didn't come with an incredible strikeout rate. He was at a 24% strikeout rate, but we've seen him miss bats before. So if you're telling me he had a mid-2 ERA, a 1.10 whip in 76 and two-thirds innings, and the only thing that was really missing, because we love the team context with the young Orioles, is that he didn't miss a lot of bats. Well, we've seen that he flashes good breaking balls and a solid changeup and a good fastball that he runs up to 98. So I've seen the components of a pitcher who can miss bats. So I believe that maybe we now get that more often. And second half version of Grayson Rodriguez was a really solid pitcher. And so I'm banking on the upside there, where I find like him and Yuri Perez, there's maybe more strikeout upside with Yuri Perez. So he's a little higher for me, but I think they're both really strong potential future aces.
Yeah. I was a little surprised to see that too, but I this morning I was kind of breaking down Rodriguez this season, and you know, he was on a couple of my teams, so obviously I benefited from his success in the second half. But to really, you know, if you look at the surface stats, the season ERA, you might lose sight of the progress that he made in the second half. And just really, he was a different pitcher after coming back from the minors. Logan Gilbert is a tricky one for me because it's easy to see, especially with like the excellent control, his strikeout rate was up this year. There's got to be like another level here. I don't know if it's just figuring out the right pitch mix for him, but he's another pitcher where I see the ingredients there for him to take that next step forward. Maybe it's a little aggressive ranking for me, but it is crazy. If you look at the Mariners staff, like,
oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, Luis Castillo, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert, all in my top 13. Like, this should be a buzzsaw team, right?
I will say that I've done more rankings. I have Bryce Miller 30 and Brian Wu 31 right now, which means I have all five Mariners starting pitchers inside my top 31 fantasy starters. Yes, it should be an absolutely lights out rotation with a good bullpen. I would not be surprised if the Mariners are next year's Orioles in the sense of the team that like takes a huge leap forward. And we see them really contend. The Logan Gilbert thing is interesting because the first half of the year, his splitter was crazy. And you were like, he found that pitch. It really struggled in the second half of the year. But, you know, when I put him 21, it was because I said, okay, the splitter didn't do well, but it still missed bats in the second half of the year. So it got hit hard. It was not an effective pitch in terms of defense independent ERA, which, you know, measures the ERA on a pitch regardless of how it's defended, which is pretty obvious from, you know, the name. But when you still have a swinging strike rate of 29% on a pitch, it says, okay, something about this pitch is working. The pitch as a whole might not work, but even when it's struggling, there's something really good here. So I'm just banking on a young pitcher who we know consistently works to improve his arsenal because we know where he goes to driveline. We've seen all the videos. We've seen him tinkering. Like, he knows their issues. And so, yeah, I don't believe he fixes it as much as you believe, but it comes to a point where, like, you have to draft on the upside and what we've seen. And even when things aren't clicking for him, he's a really solid pitcher. So if things do click, he's definitely a top 20 pitcher.
So I think the big question from our listeners here will be, where is Blake Snell? he's in my top 30, but I was a little resistant to include him in my top 20, mostly because I will probably not be drafting him next year unless he falls considerably. I'm assuming that's the way you feel about him as well.
Yes. So Snell is also in my top 30. He is another pitcher who is a free agent. And so, again, team context will matter and will be important. You can't knock a 225 ERA. He was great. It came with a 374 expected ERA. It came with a 406 Sierra. It came with a 13.3% walk rate and a 1.19 whip. Yeah. So there were some flaws, even though he was electric from, you know, an ERA standpoint. And also you love the swing strike rate, strikeouts, all of that. But again, remember, like, he struggled at the beginning of the year, which he tends to do. He is not really great out of the gate usually. And so I just didn't feel like he was as safe as some of the guys I had above him. So he's in my top 30, and maybe gets bumped up if he moves into a really good team context. But yeah, I couldn't slide him in ahead of some of these other guys.
So Blake Snell or Justin Steele next year for you?
Actually that's funny. They were close in my rankings. I have Blake Snell higher. I will say I have Blake Snell 25 and I have Cole Reagans 26. And we'll see how I wind up on Reagans, but, like, I think people forget that Cole Reagans was a really highly valued prospect who had multiple injuries and surgeries. It seems like he came out of nowhere, but he didn't actually come out of nowhere. His progress was just delayed by injury, and now we're kind of seeing it come to light. I did want to mention, I'm curious, where do you even have Zach Eflin ranked?
He was on the cusp of my top 20. I was kind of going back and forth between Eflin, Lizardo, and Joe Ryan for my final, for number 20. So yeah, he's right there.
So I moved Eflin into my top 20 after digging in a little more. I didn't expect to have him here because I think everybody understands that this was a little bit of a peak year for Zach Eflin. And so you're saying, okay, I don't want to pay for the peak. But I think if we were paying for the peak, he's probably drafted inside of the top 10. I don't think putting him 20 is paying for the peak. Yeah. What I found interesting was, what was the one thing everybody said about Zach Eflin coming into the year? Oh, if only he uses the curveball more. Well, he jumped up his curveball usage 7% going to Tampa, and that worked really well for him. Okay, well, what else did he do? In the second half of the year, when he saw a big swinging strike rate bump, he started reducing his sinker usage and introducing a four-seam more and using the four-seam in two-strike counts up in the zone. And in the second half of the year, his four-seam had a 21.3% swinging strike rate. He also changed his slider in the middle of the year to be more of a sweeper. Took over 5 miles an hour off of it, added sweep to it. Second half of the year, his slider had a 27.5% swinging strike rate. So we saw a really good year from him. And then we saw the Rays making changes in the middle of the year that were also having an impact because they were allowing Zach Eflin to miss more bats. Yep. So I'm not paying for the peak, but I'm paying for a pitcher that went to an organization that's really good with developing pitching, that had a clear plan to develop him, that turned him into a pitcher who had an incredible year. Yeah. You know, with a 350 ERA, 177.2 innings pitched. And then we had an even better second half of the year, which I think shows it was certainly wasn't fluky in the sense that, like, he wasn't pitching that far over his head. And so, again, innings concerns because he's had injuries in the past, but we're getting to a point where, like, I like the team context. I like the changes he made. I like what I saw on the field this year, 20th overall, like, you know, between him and Logan Gilbert and, you know, Logan Webb, Joe Musgrove, who I have just outside of my top 20.
Yeah, I was going to mention Joe Musgrove.
I think that Zach Eflin belongs in that category of guys.
Yeah, Musgrove, you know, we'll see how he looks in the spring in terms of his health. Of course, there was kind of a fluke accident at the beginning of the season, which delayed his start, but then the shoulder issue toward the end. So we'll have to see. He certainly warrants attention here. If he, you know, if he looks healthy in the spring, to me, he's a top 20 fantasy starting pitcher. Bobby Miller was close for me. Grayson Rodriguez was close for me. Cole Reagans, as you said, Joe Ryan. Kodai Senga kind of falls in the same area as like a Blake Snell for me, where we'll see about the control. It did get better as the season moved along, but his xERA was a bit higher than his actual ERA. So we'll see about that. I would be comfortable with him as a number two fantasy starter, but I'm not sure if he could duplicate the ERA he had this season.
Talk to me about your profusive love of Framber Valdez.
I wouldn't say it's love. I feel like, well, here's the thing about Framber. It's the sinker. It gets hit hard. This year, this year we saw that. I mean, yesterday we saw that as well. So the Astros are a smart team, and they know what's getting hit hard here. What I think is going to be interesting for Framber is how does he evolve moving forward? Does he make those tweaks to his arsenal, throw the sinker less, and you know, throw the pitches that are more effective more often? We will see. I do like the team context. I do think he flashes that ace upside as well. So would I love him as my number one starter on a mixed league staff? Probably not, but I could definitely live with him as my number two.
Sure. Yeah, I see that. I think my concern is I really liked the first half of the year Framber. And part of that was because I really liked the cutter.
Yeah.
He had a 251 ERA in the first half of the season. In the first half of the season, he was throwing the cutter 16% of the time. It had a 22% swing and strike rate. Then all of a sudden he threw the cutter 9% of the time in the second half. He also seemed to lose his feel for it a little bit because it's one of his newer pitches. And so he started to rely on the changeup more, which is fine. It's a solid pitch. It does limit his strikeout upside a little bit when compared to the cutter. So to me, it's how much do I trust that the first half Framber Valdez that had that really interesting cutter but was still relying on the sinker a lot, like could come back to a Framber Valdez that still has the cutter, also uses the sinker less, and really kind of like checks all of these boxes. If he does, I think he definitely is a top 20 pitcher. I guess I just am now at a point where I don't know. I just don't know if we're going to consistently see that. I think he may be a guy who flashes and then goes back to doing what he was doing before and flashes and goes back. So, you know, he's probably not going to be a huge strikeout guy for us. You know, I think that he's like a mid 8 K per 9, you know, low 3 ERA, good team context, still has a tendency to like walk more people than you want with like a 115, 116 type of ERA. And so there are some blemishes there that I think put him in like a 20 to 30 range, maybe.
That's fair. That's fair. We'll move on here to a couple pitchers to watch this offseason. It could be coming over to MLB. But before we do that, This Sunday night, two of the NFL's most explosive offenses meet in Philadelphia when the high-flying Dolphins take on the Eagles. Get ready for what should be a shootout at 7 p.m. Eastern this Sunday, only on NBC and Peacock.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
So let's just briefly introduce, before we go here in a couple of minutes, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, expected to be one of the most sought-after names this offseason. You know, great numbers in Japan. I mean, his numbers are insane. Sub-2 ERA for his career. Very stingy walk rate, just 25 years old. I mean, everything is matching up for him to get a monster contract this offseason. So tell the people a little bit about what you've noticed, what you've read about Yamamoto.
Yeah. So first of all, the exact number that you mentioned, it is a 1.72 ERA in 7 innings of professional baseball in Japan. It's crazy. It's stupid. It's actually basically like what Tanaka did before he came over. And we know that Tanaka was great with the Yankees for a few years. Yamamoto has better pitching numbers than Shohei did, when Shohei came over, just for comparison's sake. Yamamoto is a mid-90s fastball guy, can run it up to 97, 98-ish, has a big power curve, kind of like a 12-6 curve, a 90-mile-an-hour cutter that's kind of nasty, and also a forkball, which is not a ghost fork from Kodai Senga, but honestly, in the games I watched, the highlights I watched, isn't that much worse. It's still pretty good, and he's got elite command, and he also has a feel for his fastball where it's not always a straight four seam. He'll put some run on it. He can kind of tinker with it a little bit. And so if you saw a pitcher like that, he's a top 15 starter. Easy. Yep. The questions are, how does it correlate to the majors? He isn't a pitcher who just relies on feel, which I think is better for expecting good performance out of him, because he has elite command, but he's not just going to beat major league hitters because he has elite command. He has really good, just raw stuff.
Yeah.
He wasn't a huge strikeout pitcher in Japan, just a little bit over 9 K/9. So we can expect that to go down a little bit in the majors. So I don't think he's going to come out and, blow hitters away like Spencer Strider style. So that dings him a little bit in terms of rankings. And then you have just the human side of it, right? He's coming to a new league, 25 years old, moving to a new country. What is the team context? How do they help him to feel comfortable and at home and on his routine and all of that sort of stuff? And so I think that there's that inherent risk, which will keep him down the rankings a little bit. But I think you could easily put him inside of your top 30 based on raw ability and the potential upside of a 25-year-old who could just come over and be lights out.
So the name that's not getting as much attention but still is expected to be posted this offseason is Shota Imanaga, who I think is more of a field type of pitcher, sub-3 ERA in each of the last three seasons in Japan, a left-hander, just turned 30 in September, so a different situation than Yamamoto for sure, but I think someone who should find a home in a rotation this offseason as well.
Yeah, I think his ranking will be fully dependent on the team context because he is a feel lefty, right? He has a 92-mile-an-hour fastball, but he has 5 or 6 pitches. He's got cutters and splitters, and he's got a sweepy or slider and a loopy or curve, and he'll throw a whole bunch of stuff at you. And so does he get to an organization that will optimize that pitch mix well? And does he get to an organization that has a defense behind him that will benefit from the fact that he's probably not going to strike out a lot of guys, but he's gonna, you know, induce a lot of soft contact. I will say, like, neither one of these guys is, Shintaro yes. Fujinami, who came over and was with the A's and then the Orioles, where you saw him pitch sometimes and you were like, oh, this is filthy, but the command was a mess. Both of these guys have plus command. I think they're going to remain in rotations. I think they belong in MLB starting rotations. Obviously, Yamamoto is a way higher ceiling, but Imanaga, I think, is somebody who will be on radars and be like a solid, you know, round out your rotation pitcher if he goes to the right team.
Good stuff. So we next week, we're likely going to be talking about our staff slow mock draft, which we're starting tomorrow, Wednesday, with the Rotoworld Baseball crew, with some of our friends around the industry. So we'll have some information coming out of that, including where some of these starting pitchers are going early. So check that out next week. Remember to subscribe to Circling the Bases wherever you get your podcasts. You can actually find all your favorite NBC sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports. Also, do yourself a favor, check out the Rotoworld football show. We're going into what, week 7 already? Is that right?
Yeah.
Crazy, sure. Crazy. All the insight you need, waiver wire pickups, week preview ahead, everything you need to know. Check that out again, amazon.com/NBC Sports. Also, follow us on Twitter if you don't already. Eric is at SamskyNYC. I'm at DJ Short. Take care, everyone. Enjoy the playoffs. We'll see you next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.